Welcome to Coffee Conversations with Stephen Hayward of Project X. This is a time where, hopefully over a good cup of coffee, we're having some conversations with various people around the industry that might be of interest to you, our lovely listener. Hope you'll enjoy this episode of Coffee Conversations. Welcome to the third episode of Coffee Conversations. I'd like to welcome Steve Schaefer, a longtime friend and former colleague from my days at EDS, and someone that I often have coffee conversations with and then represent to folks. We're here at a Starbucks on Woodbine Avenue in Toronto. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you, Steve. It's good to be here with you. Looking forward to conversation.
Yeah, so what we're going to talk about today is just some of our experience around outsourcing and some of the things that Steve's seen. He's certainly helped run some fairly large deals and had some great experience, as well as how to help introduce outsourcing as moving to a value add in places where they were largely selling commodities and so forth. So, Steve, just to kind of kick off our conversation, you know, the fundamentals of, from a vendor point of view, of shaping an outsourcing deal, you know, you and I, you know, I would kind of cover it as it's largely financially driven, but, you know, I know you have a little more holistic view of that. Maybe you could kind of talk about what that might be from a vendor point of view.
Okay, absolutely. I'm going to take it sort of up a notch to say that when we talk about outsourcing, and I think it's important in my experience that I've seen organizations have a clear sort of understanding as to sort of what the objectives are, what they want to achieve. So I have seen outsourcing from a number of perspectives. One, certainly from an IT outsourcing piece, and then from a business process standpoint. My experience primarily from an IT outsourcing standpoint was more along the lines of an objective of cost takeout. At least that's what the organization thought it was. In fact, they probably didn't have a good grasp, and this is an overall issue, I think, of organizations that are looking to outsource is what is the objective? Typically in an IT space, and I'm going back a number of years, and I'll progress it forward. I think the initial thinking was that I'm taking 24, 25, 26, 30% out of my IT budget. And in that, necessarily, I think it becomes sort of a request for money. It becomes a financial transaction from two perspectives.
Like a recapitalization kind of thing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Is how can I actually enhance my infrastructure? How can I get better people? How can I kill the people that I don't necessarily want? Mm-hmm. You know, I hate to put it that way. But how can I do that and also get the whole project financed and potentially get some productivity along the way?
Systems refresh, another good one.
Exactly right.
But, you know, and that's when in the example you're talking big O outsource. You're moving people,
sure.
And you're moving applications and infrastructure, and those applications are proprietary to that business. So when we talk about recapitalization, we're talking about they would say that this application is worth this much on my books, and I'm going to move it on to this new thing, and you're going to write me a big check, and that moves it to an operating cost from a capital cost.
Precisely. I mean, it certainly there's a substantial amount of financial engineering, clearly, from the organization standpoint. Is what's the value of my assets? What are you going to write me a check for? What's my network going to look like? And then it's how do I refresh virtually everything, all the core infrastructure, anything that really sits on the network in some situations, how do I refresh all that? And again, get some productivity enhancement around tools, systems, how can I sort of build that into the infrastructure of the deal? And from a vendor standpoint, you're encapsulating the current and future state, you're looking at exactly what work needs to be done, clearly, and then you're trying to out-engineer, clearly in competitive situations, where your key outsourcing competitors are.
So that's a good kind of segue into one of the things that you and I have been bantering around, and I've kind of tried to post on the blog about, is the whole GM trying to change the nature of outsourcing. And, you know, I kind of seem to flip-flop myself between what are they really trying to do? Are they just trying to commoditize, or are they actually looking to just try and change the whole landscape of how they do it? What did you see in all that?
Well, that's a very good question. What I saw is certainly a departure from the norm. And I would say, I'm going to go back to the original initial question and answer, and that is, it really depends on what they're trying to achieve. I mean, most of the value right now in the outsourcing space, to me, is transformational. I know that's a buzzword, but it's actually not necessarily attacking the IT budget, but all the other budgets, all the other business process areas that you can improve. I think, from my perspective, what's excellent about outsourcing is it allows you to do new things. It allows you to tap into new markets. But primarily, for me, it's around velocity. You can do things faster. You can scale up the organizations faster. You can add velocity to business processes. I don't necessarily see that happening at GM. What I see them doing is sort of taking the whole outsourcing to its lowest common denominator, and that's an hour of labor, and trying to create some sort of standard in or across multi-vendors in a real hairy type of environment, and saying, how can I generate interchangeability here?
Yeah. And with this, I mean, one of the glory things, they talked about how short these contracts are. But, you know, I don't think it necessarily means, just because it's shorter, means you get a lot more nimbleness of the vendor. And I kind of almost thought the opposite, where, because it's so short, if, you know, they try and reinvent process and so forth to lower cost, well, once you've done it, they're just going to, you know, chop that around when they go to the next time. You know, and it kind of talks to you a little bit about offshoring, even, where people, that's a pure labor arbitrage. And, you know, we've been doing some advising of some organizations lately where, you know, everybody talks about it and they say, well, but what about this case where it failed or in this case where it was great? But at the end of the day, the reason business process outsourcing is being so popular is because you're moving up a value chain. You're now actually, as you talked about, trying to create a scalable infrastructure and back end to the business.
That's right.
And, you know, if you bring it down to that lowest common denominator from an IT point of view, you're still IT-oriented, and you're not really moving it up the value chain. So a lot of the offshore guys have caught on to that. They're smart people. And they said, we need to move up. We need to move up that value chain, because otherwise we're just going to be a lowest common denominator, and okay, I got, you know, GE, I charge $17 US an hour, and my mainstream clients, I charge $21 US an hour. Well, that's just a pure cost play, and after you've been operating for 2 years or 3 years in that way, and GM comes back and says, you need to drop it another 20%, where does that come from?
Yeah, who wants to play in that environment? You know, the reality is that the question really shouldn't necessarily be, how can I take 20% out of my IT budget? I mean, let's face it, in a $10 billion organization, that might be $10, $20 million. The question really should be, how do I gain 40% market share? How do I speed up, or how do I cut in half my product delivery life cycle? How do I do things like that? Because then you're really getting to the core of the organization. I mean, your outsourcing needs to be a tool to create competitive advantage, not to bring everything down to a lowest common denominator. The best story that I've ever heard from an outsourcing perspective is a relatively newcomer. I shouldn't say relatively. It was a newcomer to the mutual fund industry. 3 years ago, a very new market entrant whose business model relied substantially on outsourcing. So 3 years later, today, they are number 9 in the United States. From 0 to number 9 in a how big of an industry is that in 3 years is amazing. And most of it has to do with the fact that they generated velocity and scalability through not just offshoring, but using existing business models. You know, we're at a point right now in which you can basically, it's can get trading applications off the shelf, insurance applications off the shelf, right? And they leverage that.
Nike's so, another great example, which doesn't even talk IT. Basically, their whole business model is everything's outsourced. They have some core things like brand, and even their marketing's outsourced. But, like, you know, what is it that they are anymore? They're really just that entity, but, you know, all product developments elsewhere, all manufacturers elsewhere, and it's all intermovable based on the marketplace and their speed to market.
Absolutely. And what you're seeing there is a trend towards disaggregating the organization. It's understanding, and this is key to both an organization and to a vendor, because they both have to have some sort of level set as to what's core and what sort of context to the organization. The whole of this aggregation is how many pieces, how many modular pieces can you actually take out of the organization, spread around the world or around the country, wherever you might be, and have things still work.
Yeah.
And I think that's what people are struggling with right now. How much can we disaggregate? What business processes can we actually truly map and rebuild in a, you know, in an environment outside the organization? Yeah. And then the key question has to do with governance. How do you actually provide an overall governance model there? You know, when you've got so much of this of the organization sort of uprooted and moved around, it's I know there's certainly a lot of issues, but it's that's where outsourcing needs to go. And that is how much can you disaggregate and how do you manage it?
Yeah, I love that. You know, everybody just focuses on the disaggregation and usually from a no, I can't do it point of view, as opposed to how could I figure out how to do it. But the governance one is one that just everybody skips over. I mean, I've seen so many people who say, I'm choosing a tier one or a tier two, and they've got their CMM level five, and they've got processes and all that other stuff. But at the end of the day, you know, those companies only bring what they're basically forced to bring or whatever might be the model. And the clients forget that you need to have some really strong governance and monitoring and process and all that other stuff. So let's take the GM example. Now they've made it so that instead of every 7 years, every 4 years, they're renegotiating and taking it everything out to RFP and RFI. And how long does it take to just do the evaluation? How long does it take to then do the transition? How long does it take? And who's running it? Is it the outsourcer or is it the client?
All good questions. And just the onerous nature of clauses in that contract, not that I've had first-hand viewpoint, but I can just imagine how, you know, it's more of a stick as opposed to a carrot type of negotiating. So when you're a vendor and you've been asked by a partner, a client, to generate some sort of competitive advantage in this specific domain, how are you going to do it? You're constrained on a number of factors.
You've got a contract. That's how you came up with the price point that got you to where you are. I have a friend at IBM who runs a really large outsourcing contract, and he said, the problem with outsourcing contracts is just it's a point in the sand, and everything else after that is negotiation.
Yeah.
So really the operating is negotiation, because in some cases the customer isn't used to it, and you know, used to be able to call up Joe in IT and say, come fix my computer. Now they're calling up a generic help desk and saying, you know, yeah, interesting problem, but I got a bigger system down and you'll be on the back of the list.
It bogs down the whole process, really, in my eyes. You know, people that have been signed up to actually help this business in a number of ways are constrained to do that. B, you've got so much infighting, even amongst the organization, the governance organization that's looking at managing this process, that they become dysfunctional. So it really becomes the stick type of approach. You know, and GM has a long history of doing this, not just in outsourcing, but with their tier ones, 0.5s, 2.3s. I mean, the objective, I think, is to not necessarily go in partnership to produce competitive advantage. It's a little different. I think it's just to drive down their overall costs, which is a key issue for them, clearly.
When you get what you pay for, it's the difference between value and price. I mean, the Japanese, the Toyotas of the world, who go and engage with their vendors and actually do call them partners, and they're looking at how can you drive value for me, whether it's reduced cost or increased quality, whatever it is that they're going to refer to as value, versus, oh, you introduced this great idea, I'm now going to go shop it around and get the lowest price on it. So guess what? All of a sudden, all these people say, I'm not going to tell you what the best things are because you're just going to shop it, and it means that my competitors now have my intellectual property.
Absolutely. I mean, that's been an MO over there for quite some time. But, you know, whether others will sort of see this as a go-forward model, I'm not sure. You know, I think a lot of people that are just starting to engage in this process are really looking at this GM perspective to, you know, and they're standing back and they're saying, you know, is there validity to this model? But, you know, I submit again that there are two real objectives here. There are multiples, but the broad overarching ones are how much can we take out of this organization cost-wise?
Yeah.
And that's where GM is, I think. But the other one basically is, how do we transform this company? How do we make it faster? How do we make it better? How can I go with an organization in which the brain trust, potentially in North America, is focusing on the core business issues and not necessarily the contextual ones? Running my IT shop, running a print center, running whatever it is, but something that's just ancillary.
Managing my energy spend.
Well, that's exactly right. You got it. It's, you know, where is that going to go, though? You know, I think a lot of people have actually put their outsourcing on hold to see kind of what is happening with GM. And, you know, to a certain degree, you can use this to sort of go forward in a limited way, I think. I think the reality is that a lot of organizations are extremely wary of putting all their eggs in a basket. So if you go with potentially with a portfolio approach, which I think is the trend, best of breed sort of business process outsourcing, I think that's probably a wise idea. But I think that the GM model is potentially taking that to the extreme.
But, you know, an interesting thing, and this is my flip side to my beating down on the whole model, is one of the things that I really respect in that whole thing is the fact that they're challenging the norm and really trying to ask the vendors to change the way they are. And if you look at the tier one vendors, I don't care if it's offshore or outsourcing, it's largely, this is how we do it, take it or leave it. And they all kind of speak the same different flavor of the same brand of coffee or whatever you want to say is your analogy. And, you know, I think that's one thing that does need to happen, and I'm hoping that GM is just trying to really push that envelope, and I think there's some really good long-term value in that. And, you know, the reality is they didn't give all their whole fleet of contracts out. There was only a portion. So maybe they decided these are the ones that really are just commodities to me. And that's what they did. And if that's the case, that's good. And now let's focus on the true value add, and I'll treat the other ones differently. So maybe do a co-invest on solving this, and now that one's a 10-year outsourcing agreement because you're just agreeing to this kind of cost takeout or this kind of variabilization or whatever it is. And that would really change the way people work and think and feel, and, you know, in the GM world, that would allow EDS to start bringing some of that strong brain trust, which they've got some brilliant people. We worked with some really smart folks there, and let them come to the table as opposed to really fending them off.
Absolutely. And part of that goes back to, you know, earlier discussion in and around understanding organizations, understanding what's really core, what's context, what's actually creating competitive advantage, what's strategic, what isn't. And that's an extremely, to me, that's a difficult question to answer at times. Because as organizations grow, the answer may change. So I think that GM and other organizations, I should just point out to them, you know, they are struggling with where's my real competitive advantage coming from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, another good example is pharma. I mean, pharma, you know, the standard is, you know, the R&D cost of $1 billion per new product is kind of standard, but that's all now been challenged by, you know, offshoring, in which that's been chopped down into a half or third, right?
Yeah, so, did you read that, you would have read that Business Week article where that one pharma guy is taking all these best-in-class innovation techniques from whatever industry it is, and now putting them into his pharma business to make it so that they reduce their cycle way fast by, and it was a great article where it broke them down. I'll refer to it in the notes to this, but really nice article about really trying to be innovative, and as you say, look at what's the best breed and how do you bring other learnings into pharma.
Absolutely. And, you know, to your point earlier, it's changing the game, changing the model, and frankly, you know, there are alternative ways of modeling these things, and but my experience is the outsourcers are leading that charge, and the resistance has typically come from the GMs and the other organizations of this world. But, you know, it's certainly nice to see that, you know, GM is looking at least challenging the norm, as you were saying, and potentially utilizing all the skills and resources that these outsourcers have.
Yeah. Well, Steve, thank you very much. I appreciate the time, and it's a nice evolution to some of the conversations we've had in the past.
Absolutely.
And as you can imagine, the information that we have and we're talking about is all based on public information as opposed to knowing anything that other people know might know more about GM or the Farmer or any of these other places. So this is all just a conversation, but I really appreciated your time and look forward to some other conversations on some other topics in the future. And thanks very much.
Thank you, Steve. Good to be here with you.
All right, cheers. For more information about Project X, please join us at www.pxltd.ca or hop on our blog at pxltd.typepad.com. And look forward to seeing you on our next episode. This is the copyright of Project X Limited.